this episode of the Naturist Living Show, pornography.
This episode of the Naturist Living Show is brought to you by Bear Oaks Family Naturist Park. At Bear Oaks, we offer traditional naturist values in a modern setting. Free your body, free your mind. www.bearoaks.ca.
Welcome to episode 27 of the Naturist Living Show. In the last month or so, we actually passed a very big milestone. We've had over 100,000 downloads of the show. Now, that's full downloads of the show, not hits to the website or page views or anything like that, but people who have downloaded a show that's between half an hour and an hour, which is many megabytes of download, and they've done full downloads of these shows, these 26 episodes, over 100,000 times. So that's thank you, because that's yourself who's listening right now and many others, and I appreciate your interest. I'm flattered that you are interested in what I have to say. I am encouraged by the fact that so many people are interested in the naturist message that I'm talking about. And I know that all of you listening are naturists because there's no pictures. This is one of the things I love about the audio podcast. It's very convenient. It's easier to produce and you can listen to it anywhere you want. And there are many of these advantages that are good for any podcast. But in the case of a naturist podcast, because there are no images, I know that everyone listening is interested in the message, in the philosophy, in the ideals behind naturism that we're discussing. You're here to listen because you believe, not just because you're looking to get a little cheap thrill looking at pictures. So thank you, all of you, for listening, and I know the numbers keep growing, and I look forward to getting to 1 million downloads of our episode in the future. When I did the Naturist Music Show, it was pointed out quite rightly by one of our listeners that I forgot one particular song, which is actually fairly important. As I said, we've reached 100,000 downloads. It's been a little over 2 years now, 26 episodes. But the very first episode, episode number one, which was just a bit of an introduction, featured a song called Nature Is by Brian Madison. And so when I went through all the music and naturist music that I had dug up and that I had discussed with the various artists out there, I neglected to mention this one. So I'm going to make this up now by playing the song. And before we get started on the more serious topic of this show, after pretty much exactly 2 years, we've had 100,000 downloads of the show. And this is the song that started it all.
When winter gets me feeling low.
Yeah. Well, let's see how that is.
When winter gets me feeling low, there's just one place I want to go. Can't wait to see something live and green. Shed these layers, follow me, dear. Shake off this gray winter right here. The trees and us with nothing in between. Unconstrained by cold conventions, losing all our old pretensions. Lord knows, baby, we have paid our dues. If we abandon all these modest schemes and ratify some better means, we've got nothing to lose but our blues. Naturally you, naturally we, naturally me. Naturally you, naturally we, naturally me. me.
Barefoot beginnings, that's a start to liberate our gentle hearts. The grass between our toes, no shoes or socks. Release the threads that keep us bound, just leave them lying on the ground in a little pile beside those rocks.
Far away from preconception, no intentions, no deceptions, nothing left to hide, just like we planned. Gymnasts, sophists, dancers, we have never ever felt so free as running in this meadow hand in hand. Natural you, natural we, natural me. Natural you, natural we, natural me. To civilization we return soon, but it's only quarter past noon. There's still time to roam these acres fair.
Let's go see how that river flows. We'll have no need for fancy clothes, no uniforms or fig leaves if we dare.
Accept us as we are. No other way we'd rather be, wearing smiles of joy we see from social constructs we have come so far. A springtime breeze will welcome in, like a birthday born again, finding peace for life in our true skin. Let's have a picnic in the sun. We'll be like children, free and fun. The sun and air, that's what nature is. Nature is you, nature is we, nature is me. Nature is you, nature is we. Nature is me. Nature is you. Nature is we. Nature is me. Nature is you. Nature is we. Nature is me.
So that was Nature Is by Brian Madison. So now let's move on to our slightly heavier topic of the day, pornography. Now, generally, we have a show which I think is perfectly suitable for anyone to listen to. This show, we're going to be discussing a dark side of human nature in pornography. We're going to be dwelling into some areas that you may not be comfortable in. And certainly, if you have children listening, if you're playing this in a car and there's children in the car with you, you might reconsider continuing to play the show at this point. You might want to save it for a time when you're by yourself. If you are particularly sensitive, you might also consider whether you want to listen to this show, because there's going to be some descriptions of things that are done in pornography which are going to be somewhat disturbing. So this is your fair warning. So pornography is defined by the Oxford Dictionary as a noun, and it is, according to them, printed or visual material containing the explicit description or display of sexual organs or activity intended to stimulate sexual excitement. So that's what they define as pornography. And so why are we talking about pornography here? Well, because It is very relevant to naturism. Not, of course, because naturism is pornography. We know very well that it is not. But you also know that it is often confused as pornography. The key in the definition from Oxford is they intended to stimulate sexual excitement. So right off the bat, nude pictures in a naturist or nudist contest are not intended to stimulate sexual excitement. They may have that impact for some people, there's no question, but that's not the intention. Therefore, it's not really pornography by that definition. Because really, any image could be designed to sexually stimulate people, and particularly if they have a certain fetish. So if they have a foot fetish, a collection of imagery of feet might be considered pornography because they are certainly intended to stimulate sexual excitement. Those are not sexual organs, and I guess it's probably not sexual activity, although I guess it depends on what your idea of sexual activity is. But it could still be a pornographic material to some people, and I know that some people collect them with that idea in mind because of whatever fetish they have that turns them on. So pornography is a very important topic for us to think about and be aware of and understand because naturism is often confused as pornography. It's confused to our detriment. One of the best examples was PayPal in 2008. The Federation of Canadian Naturists had been using PayPal to collect online payments for 4 years without any problems. And then suddenly, without any notice, any discussion, our accounts were shut down. In fact, the money that was in the account was even held for a period of time. And the reason they gave us, you know, you never manage to get much of an answer out of PayPal. A lot of these sites make these arbitrary decisions and then hide behind faceless policies and emails, and which seem fairly inhuman, perhaps not even responded by human, perhaps fully automated, who knows. Couldn't get anybody to discuss it on the phone, couldn't get anybody to give us a personalized answer. Everything seemed to be a template response. And basically, they were telling us that we'd violated their service agreement because we had, quote, sexually oriented goods or services involving minors, or services for which the purpose is to facilitate meetings for sexually oriented activities. I don't know how being a member of the Federation or subscribing to Going Natural could count, but essentially, you know, they had defined their pornography, and they believed that what we had was sexually oriented goods. And obviously it isn't, but sexuality is in the eye of the beholder. And certainly things that turn you on may not turn others on. So this is a perfect example, and it's not the only one. Most websites, most mainstream websites ban pornography, although they never define it, and their definition may include naturist images, or even naturist thoughts for that matter. And a lot of them ban mere nudity as well, because they think the nudity, of course, is sexual. I haven't used PayPal, by the way, since then. I have no account. I don't buy. I refuse to buy, and I tell everyone why, because I don't like their policies. And I would urge all of you to not use PayPal. Use alternatives, but don't use PayPal, because they did not deal with us or many other naturist businesses that have had their PayPal accounts suspended. They have not dealt with any of us very well, and they have not certainly shown us any respect. But back to pornography, there's also a naturist or nudist fantasy out there, and that really hurts us. It hurts us because the PayPals of the world see those and believe that we are pornography. You know, if you listen to episode 26, the last one on exploitation, I touched on that. That is, people who use us and hide behind the cloak of legitimacy that naturism can provide for their imagery that they want to sell to people who have whatever fetish. And, you know, there's been a lot of media, videos, articles, pictorials in adult magazines about nudists and what really goes on in nudist places. And, you know, I remember growing up seeing Playboy images of nudists, quote-unquote, frolicking. Of course, they weren't real nudists, and they certainly weren't typical women that were in the imagery. But that was being sold, and that's an image that sells. I ran across once in a website a picture that was on a beach where I had been. I had been when that picture was taken. It was a naturist picture that had been stolen from somewhere, taken completely out of context, and it had a caption to make it worse that said that just after the picture was taken, the entire beach turned into a big giant orgy. And of course, people are just standing around. There's not much going on in this picture. It's a fairly boring, normal naturist picture. But of course, here they were selling a fantasy, which was completely false because I was there, of what was happening theoretically after this picture was taken. So that apparently sells. It apparently titillates some people who have this fantasy of what naturism below the surface really is. And as we talked in the last show, there are places that actually are like that, and they call themselves naturists, doing none of us any favor, harming the movement greatly, because they call themselves nudists or naturist places when they really are just places for sex, places where there is no naturist philosophy. It's strictly about the nudity and generally the sex that goes with it and the objectification and the sexualization of it all. Really not much different than a strip joint. So that really hurts. That's pornography really hurting us. That's the naturist porn fantasy, which isn't real, which is out there. But most importantly, pornography really goes against naturist values. That's at the real core of naturism. Because naturism is about respect for self and for others and for the environment. So the environment doesn't really fit into this, but the respect for self and others is certainly there, because a lot of porn hurts people. It hurts the consumers of porn. It hurts men probably the most, despite the fact that it's the women that are debased and made to look like objects. I think the psychological harm is even more intense on men. But it also hurts the performers who are really forced to do these things. I know there's all these stories, which really are fantasies, I believe, of all these women that want to be porn stars. And of course, they're going to say that if they're going to sell. But, you know, it's just like the old story that women really want to be prostitutes. You know, you might rationalize what you're doing for a living. But is it really a free choice when it's the money, the easy money that can drive them to do it? But these are just my opinions and my thoughts, which I've had for a number of years. It's something I've been pondering and thinking and aware of because of the naturist indirect connection to pornography. Naturism and pornography are sadly very closely linked, even though we're actually always fighting for the opposite, which is why we're often accused of being overly sensitive about sex, because we're always being mixed up with pornography. We are not. We're the opposite. And then in October of 2010, I heard an interview on CBC Radio. For you folks who are listening who are not in Canada, the CBC is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. You may be familiar with the BBC in the UK. That's the Canadian version, the CBC. In the Australia, it's the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. It seems like all of us Commonwealth countries or former British colonies have a variation on the public broadcaster. Anyway, on this show, they had Gail Dines. She was debating whether porn has hijacked our sexuality, which was exactly consistent with what I've been thinking and saying. She's a professor of sociology and women's studies in Boston, and her writing and lectures really focus on the hypersexualization of culture and the ways that porn filters down into mainstream pop culture, into our society. Her work on media and pornography is everywhere, as I discovered when I looked her up. She's been an international speaker everywhere. She's a very, very prolific author in newspapers and magazines. She's a frequent guest on radio and TV, which is how I heard of her. But she's also the author of many academic journals as well. And she had a new book that she was talking about called Pornland, And from that, she said something which actually really rung true with me, because as the father of two boys, I'd been very aware of this. I didn't know the statistic. That statistic is one that she gave in the show, which is that the average age that young boys first see pornography now is 11 years of age. 11 years old. You know, when I was a kid, you know, getting your hands on pornography probably meant getting a copy of Playboy. And it wasn't easy. You had to either buy it in a store, which required an awful lot of nerve, and most of us didn't when we were young, or we could get our hands on maybe somebody's father's magazine that got snuck out of the house. And then when we did, we saw pictures of, well, unrealistic women, of course, posing for us. And so that is a soft porn, and it certainly still had the subservient message, the objectification that we talked about, but it was pretty mild. But today, and by the age of 11, according to the statistics, kids can see the most hardcore porn in video format. They can see fetishes and sexual acts, if you can call it sex, that are beyond the imagination, certainly beyond any thought or imagination that we had when we were teenagers. And so the question is, how is that impacting us? Because as a father, I have to assume that my children will see it. I can't prevent it. Yeah, I can control access to the internet, but they go to their friend's house, and they can go all kinds of places, and they can probably find their way around filters or look at things when I'm not around. You can't prevent this from happening. Eventually, they will see it. So as a father, I've had to consider that they will see things that I never even thought of when I was their age. And they may be really damaged by those imagery. They may be damaged by the idea. They may think that women act a certain way, as they do in pornography. They may think that women want certain things that isn't really true. They may get a really warped sense of what relationships are like and what women are for and what they are for and how they are supposed to act. It's very disturbing. And so since I can't prevent it, I have to assume that I have to talk to them to make sure I can give context. And it's very strange because, you know, as hard as it has been for parents to talk to their kids about sex in our society, not in for us actually, in our family, we've been fairly open talking about sex. And perhaps being a naturist has made that easier. But I digress. Beyond that, we have to not just talk about sex, we have to talk about pornography. We have to talk about the dark side and explain to them why it's wrong, why it's not real, why it does not represent what real women are like, what real relationships are like, or what real men are like. We have to prepare them or give them context in case they've already seen it. And that's an even more awkward conversation to have than any sexual conversation you might have about where babies come from and how they're made. So I was interested enough by the discussion that Dr. Dines was having on CBC that I decided that I wanted to talk to her myself and get her take on pornography and specifically its connection to naturism and how that is most relevant to us. So what follows is my interview with Dr. Gail Dines. So let's start with the very basic. What's wrong with pornography?
Well, what pornography is about and what makes pornography pornographic is actually the debasement and humiliation of the woman. I mean, that's what gives it its sexual sizzle. And if you look at pornography today, what you see is that it looks nothing like your father's Playboy of 10, 15 years ago. You know, and those images were bad enough in the way they commodified and objectified women's sexuality. But today, you've got a whole new level of violence and degradation and cruelty, really. And when you look at the images in pornography, what you see basically are women being tortured. I mean, women being gagged with a penis, you know, women being penetrated anally sometimes, you know, to such a degree that for many women in pornography, one of the big problems are the anal prolapses, where literally their anuses drop out of their body, where you've got things like ATM, which is ass to mouth, where men put their penis in a woman's anus and then without washing puts it in her mouth or another woman's mouth. So now what you're seeing in the industry is you've got women coming up with fecal throat infections, you know, things that basically people in the outside the sex industry never have to worry about. So, you know, my issue is you know, what happens to the women in the sex industry, what happens to the men who view pornography, and what happens to the women who these men date and basically insist on playing out porn sex on their bodies.
So this is an area that you're very specifically studying, and you've written a book on it. How are you seeing people's attitudes towards each other and relationships change as a result of this?
Okay, well, I talk about that a lot in my book, which is called Pornland. And what I do is I interview men and I interview women, and I sort of ask them about their experiences of pornography. And often this comes after I've given a lecture in a college, because I travel across the country lecturing on this. And often the students come to me because they want to share their experiences with me. And what I find is for the men is that the earlier they actually consume pornography, the more pornography gets encoded into their sexual DNA. The more they want to play out these acts on their girlfriend's bodies, the more they have difficulty in forming intimate relationships. Often they tell me that they have difficulty just staying aroused with their girlfriends or partners, and that what they have to do to stay aroused is to conjure up images of their favorite pornography scene in their head in order to stay aroused. Sometimes they even lose interest in pornography, in sex with women, because pornography is actually, it's so easy. You know, I mean, you don't need to talk to her, you don't need to engage with her, you don't need to buy a dinner, you don't need to do anything. You can just basically, you know, masturbate to her, and when you're finished, you know, put her in the closet or turn your computer off or whatever you want to do with it. What it does is it really cuts across men's ability to form connected, intimate relationships with women. And also, you know, after you've been masturbating to what is really industrial strength sex, which is what you have in pornography, actual sex with another human being looks boring and banal in comparison. And so I think that explains also why a lot of men, you know, say that the sex with their girlfriend just doesn't cut it anymore. It's just not exciting, it's not arousing, it's not interesting. And it makes sense as well when you look at the psychological studies on this, because what they found is that the more men actually use pornography, the more they become desensitized to the images, and the more they need to keep ratcheting up the levels of cruelty and violence just to stay interested. So, I mean, there's a lot of empirical evidence to show this, and also for my interviews, it's definitely having a profound effect.
So how far does this go? If men have to keep ratcheting it up, where does it end?
Well, this is a very good question, actually, and one that the pornography industry is facing. And when I interview the pornographers, one of the things that they tend to say is that they're running out of ideas. Because, you know, really, when you look at pornography today, they have literally done everything you can to the woman's body, basically short of killing her. And they're really running out of these ideas. What can they do? So I think one potential place where pornography is going is actually towards children. Now, remember, the industry is a multi-billion dollar a year industry connected to mainstream corporations, especially credit card industries, hotels, which now make $500 million a year just on pornography sales. In fact, hotels make more money from renting pornography than they do from the minibars. So that gives you a sense of the size of the industry. So, I mean, you know, this is an industry that needs to stay within the law because of the amount of money that's actually invested in it. So what they did in 2002 was actually the Free Speech Coalition, which is the lobbying arm of the porn industry, basically lobbied the Ashcroft Supreme Court to say that the 1997 Child Abuse Prevention Act, which said that you couldn't have under 18s in pornography or women who looked under 18. Basically, the Free Speech Coalition said that narrowed the free speech rights of the pornography industry and that they should be allowed to have people in who looked under 18. The Ashcroft Court agreed with them, and now you have a new law. And what you've seen after this law is an explosion of sites that I call pseudo-child porn sites. Well, actually, they look very much like child porn sites. I'm sure the woman in it is 18, given that, as I say, they want to stay within the law. But what happens is in the actual imagery they look like a 12 or 13. So what you're doing is you're basically entering to a whole new niche market. We're getting grown men interested in children as potential sex partners.
So and you've talked also about the impact that it has on men. What impact does it have on women, who's because they're watching pornography, it seems, more and more these days?
Well, they're not watching the same thing that the men are watching. I mean, pornography now is split into two in the industry, and nobody really talks about softcore or hardcore, because softcore porn has really migrated into pop culture. So the two major genres of pornography today are basically gonzo, which is the in-your-face, cruel, violent pornography, which is the biggest moneymaker for the industry. And the second one is feature, which is a more kind of softcore ish type, but it's still very body punishing sex. Only this time they have attempted a storyline and some music in the background, etc. Now the women are looking often at the feature porn, very rarely at the gonzo. And let me tell you, the industry always talk about women, you know, always talks about women looking at porn. The truth is, it's still a very, very small amount. The vast majority of pornography, and in some cases, pornographers have told me about, you know, 85 to 90% of pornography is still bought by men. Now, I would say that from my experiences with talking to women as well, often they look at pornography because their boyfriend or husband or whoever thinks it would be a good idea for them to spice up their sex life. So sometimes the men are using pornography as a way to groom their girlfriends or wives into doing more porn sex.
It's a topic which has been a great concern to me because I have young children, and I've come to a realization that they're going to have the ability to see video of sex acts and fetishes that I couldn't even have imagined as a child. What do you think is going to happen to these children that are growing up in this world?
Well, that's a great question, and one which I ponder throughout the book, because first of all, no one can know for sure. The reason for that is that we're now in the midst of a massive social experiment. We have never before brought up a generation of boys on hardcore pornography, and the average age of first viewing pornography today is 11 years old. And remember, as I said, the pornography they view is the world of cruelty and brutality. It's not Playboy or Penthouse. So the question is, you know, what effect is it going to have? Well, I think one of the effects is that it's going to make men and boys have a very, very difficult time connecting to women as human beings. I think it's going to make them think of women and girls as sex objects, as women, as people who do not deserve the same civil and human rights as men. Because, you know, in pornography, women, they're not human beings. They're just basically orifices to, you know, fill. That's all they are. Any human qualities that you see are completely stripped away from women in pornography. And instead, what's delivered up is, just as I say, a series of holes. Now, what do I think is going to happen? I think the boys are going to become increasingly desensitized to women as human beings. And I think the girls are going to increasingly see themselves as just sex objects. And one of the things that's going on now is what psychologists call internalized sexual objectification, where girls are really learning to objectify themselves in their own eyes, where they're really taking on what we call the male gaze, the image of themselves as men would look at them. So you see girls now wearing clothes which are hypersexual. You see very young girls wearing hypersexual clothes. You know, they even have sort of push-up bras for juniors today, prepubescent girls. So I think what you're going to see is a whole ratcheting up of the hypersexualization of our culture. Now, in terms of girls, there was a study done by the American Psychological Association which looked at what happens when girls sort of over-sexually objectify themselves. And what they found was for these girls, there was an increased rate of anorexia, bulimia, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, depression, anxiety, all of these things. So, I mean, we know from research that the more girls begin to self-objectify, the more they hypersexualize themselves, the lower their self-esteem. So that's what's affecting girls. And I think the other thing that I talk to my students about is there is no sense anymore of a sort of sexual ethic or sexual integrity. I mean, they don't know what it is to have any integrity of the body. That if they want to have boyfriends, if they want to date or hook up, then basically they have to do what the guys want them to do. Remember, these guys are learning their sex education from pornography. So we're not talking about any connected sex here.
So what would you suggest to parents who want to raise healthy children, healthy boys who respect women, but who undoubtedly will see this, if not at their house, at their friend's house?
Well, there's two answers to that. I mean, there's the sort of micro individualistic answer, which is you have to do media literacy with your children. You have to talk about media effects. You have to introduce them to media and analyze it and give them some kind of immunization to the power of the image. And you also, I think, need to be very careful in terms of the peer group that your kids develop, although, of course, as parents, you often have little actual power over this. So, I mean, you can do little things like that. You shouldn't have no kid should have a computer in their room. The computer should be in the middle of the house. But in a bigger world, in a sort of more macro level, what we really need to think about doing is organizing as a group against the porn industry. I mean, I don't know why parents aren't doing this already. I mean, surely, you know, a job of a parent is to socialize their kid into the culture, but now we've provided a toxic culture. So you've made the job of a parent impossible. And so I think the next major social movement, the next major rights issue should be parents who have an absolute right to decide the culture that their children live in. And at the moment, the pornographers and the pop culture corporations are the ones deciding and determining the nature of the culture. So I think we need a massive movement. And towards this, I just want to encourage people to go on the website to Stop Porn Culture, where we have resources and ideas and articles, etc. And one of the things we try and do at Stop Porn Culture is to get some kind of a movement going, not only in this country, but all over the world, to begin to that organizes people against pornography. And I would like to see parents spearheading this, given that they're in the more almost impossible situation today.
So we, you know, within a naturist movement, we're always seeing men generally coming in to websites or to the places looking for something other than naturism, looking for sexuality and objectification of the human body. With all of the hardcore pornography that's out there, why do you think we're still faced with that kind of exploitation as naturists?
You know why? I'll tell you why, which is, and that's actually also a very interesting question. But I'll tell you why I think. I think because, and this is what happened when I interviewed incarcerated, these were men, not pedophiles, these were non-pedophile men who'd raped children. So just let me sort of fill you in on it. These were men who preferred sex with adult women and had gone to children because they were bored. Now, when I asked them, why did you do this? And I think what they told me would be similar to why people are going on your websites, is they said they got tired with the fake imagery in pornography, the women with the fake breasts, you know, having fake orgasms. They wanted something real, and that children were the obvious real, untainted, innocent imagery. And I would say that your websites offer images of real human beings, and that has become bizarre, in a bizarre way, a new niche market for men who've become over desensitized through the pornography use.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very bizarre, because you know there's a whole niche market in pornography today for women who have pubic hair. Because no women in pornography have pubic hair. If you want pubic hair today in on your women, you have to go to a special niche market. It's become a fetish, basically, pubic hair in pornography today.
Well, actually, it's an interesting observation because, you know, I've been a naturist for a few decades, and you know, I have a unique vantage point that I see what people do with their pubic hair, and I'm seeing more and more people, if
women,
not a majority,
men as well.
Men as well, but more mostly women, but men as well, completely shaved now, and which is something that didn't exist before.
That's completely from the porn industry. There's absolutely, even the porn industry themselves say that's from the porn industry. Because where did that come from? I saw that turning up in pornography about 10, 15 years ago. And I remember thinking this is going to eventually come down into pop culture and into mass media. And it's going to affect the way that real women in the world live. And indeed, you know, I just had an interview with a woman who is a adolescent sexual assault nurse. So her job is basically to deal with girls who've been sexually assaulted. And she said, and I live in the state of Massachusetts, she says from one end of the state to the other, in the past few years, she has not seen not one girl with pubic hair. Not one. 100%, she said. And that to me sounds ridiculous, but she said absolutely 100%. And I know from, you know, talking to my students and the colleges I go around that this has now swept young women today. And you know why? One of the reasons why is from what my students tell me and what I hear is that their boyfriends refuse to have sex with them to have any pubic hair because their boyfriends feel it's so disgusting because they're so used to looking at women with no pubic hair in pornography.
Interesting. Yeah, we you know, it affects men in the general public. There's always a problem in naturism with single men because, you know, if there's problems, it tends to be single men, not single women, which is not to say we don't allow single men at Bear Oaks, but we there's a subset of what women describe as creepy men. And I actually did a whole show on this. And within creepy men, there's those who are there because they have nefarious intent. But then there are those who are just socially inept. And I think pornography has a lot to do with that, because they come in with the impression that if you talk dirty, for example, to a woman, or talk about how much porn you look at, you might turn them on, which of course is not the reality in the world. But I think it is a fantasy that's created by pornography, isn't it?
Oh, no question. I mean, this is what happens the more men view pornography, is the more their image of women, of men, and of sexuality gets distorted. I mean, they begin to think like the porno world. And the truth is, you know, people say, well, you know, how can you be sure that people are affected by this? And what I always say is, look, if you want any empirical evidence that images affect people, then all you need to do is look at the advertising industry. Because if the images didn't affect anyone, we'd have no advertising industry. By virtue of having a multi-billion dollar a year advertising industry where companies soak God knows how much money into advertising, we know that it must work, because these companies are not in the business of giving away money to charity. You know, they're in the business of making profits. So we know, because of the advertising industry, that images have an impact. Now, if advertising images can change consumer behavior, how is it possible that pornography would have no effect on the way men think about sex? I mean, it would be an impossible idea to think you can look at these images, masturbate to them, ejaculate to them, and walk away unchanged. That's not how humans operate in a culture.
So if somebody is listening right now who is identifying as a person who has become essentially harmed, brainwashed by pornography, how does he get better?
Well, first of all, I would say go to the website stoppornculture.org, and there's lots of resources there. There's resources on what books to read. Now, the thing is, therapists are being overwhelmed by men who are coming to them with issues around pornography, but very few therapists really know how to deal with it. So I would say you should find someone, but look very carefully for somebody who's got some expertise in this area. I think what you need to do is, and this is a lot of men who actually think they can handle the pornography, think that they're using it okay and that they can walk away from it, and then get really anxious when they start having a sexual relationship and realizing that the images are in fact, you know, impinging in their relationship. And these men don't like it. A lot of them get very upset by it. They didn't think it would happen. They thought they could walk away from the pornography unchanged. So I think if these men, you know, you're talking about, are having these issues, then what they should do is really start seriously thinking about never using pornography again, never looking at it, and reading books about addiction, reading books about how to change what you think about women and men through basically really thinking about developing a fantasy life which is based more on reality than on pornography. And then, of course, develop relationships with real human beings. That's one way out of pornography, is a relationship with a real human being.
There was a study done by Dr. Marilyn Story in the 1980s in California, and it found a lower incidence of what she classified as deviant sexual behavior amongst nudists or naturists than the general population. So, I wonder whether that would be true today or not. Do you think that there might be a role for naturism in helping people get over or around pornography?
Well, I would go larger than that. And I would say, I think there's got to be a role for how we rethink our notions of the human body altogether. And I don't just think it's in naturism. I think it's also in terms of getting rid of a consumer notion of the body, getting rid of a commodified image of the body. I mean, we have to start thinking of bodies as belonging to us, not as something always to be improved, always to be worked on, always lacking. And that's the image that we have gotten from advertising. And I think when I talk to my students, the biggest issue they have is their loathing of their body. I mean, I can't tell you how rampant this is amongst young women today, the absolute loathing of the body. And I think it's beginning to trickle down into young men as well, because you're seeing steroid abuse and all of that kind of stuff. So I think as a society, we need to rethink the body. And one of the things I say to especially women when I'm giving a talk, and which really impacts them, is I say, look, imagine for a minute you had never seen an image of a woman in a magazine. Imagine that the only bodies you ever saw were real women's bodies. Now, how different do you think you'd feel to your own body now that you've never seen an image? And they all say the same thing. They can't even begin to comprehend how differently they would feel. So I think being around real human bodies, seeing that each body, you know, works on its own terms, and understanding that bodies are different, and, you know, biologically and naturally they have different ways of being, I think to begin to appreciate the body on its own terms, removed from this kind of ridiculous skeletal image we have of women, I think that would help us really reconnect with who we are. But it will take a long, long time, because we've been so brainwashed by this commodified image.
So I read the book after my interview with Dr. Dines. In fact, I ordered a number of them there. We carry them now in the Bear Boutique at Bear Oaks. You can get them online from us if you want, but you can get them from many other sources. It's a very current book that's very popular. And there's no question that pornography does a horrible job in terms of equality, in terms of treating women as people. They are abused in these more extreme porn in particular. They are treated like objects and like slaves. They are called names. Women in general are debased, and they all appear to like it. They all appear to be willing at any time to do acts whose sole purpose seems to be to please men, and doing so is the only thing they seem to want in life. It certainly affects the sense that women have of themselves and what their role should be in the relationship, because although they don't generally watch porn the way men do, or boys and girls do, the girls and the women are still impacted because what the men see affects what they want. Men ask for porn-type behavior and may even treat women in such a way. And it has filtered down into all kinds of media, advertising, fashion. You see references to it all the time in mainstream show without actually seeing porn. You hear references about it all the time. So it affects women's sense of self. But I still think, and I think that's also what Gail was saying, was that men are most hurt by porn, and in turn, therefore, hurt women, because they learn bad technique. I mean, a technique in porn is not anything to really give yourself the best satisfaction. Based on my experience, it's designed to give the best possible visual performance for the audience. It suggests an ability to act sexually that is unrealistic and is actually really only obtained through artificial means and drugs and injections and all kinds of strange things that male porn stars have to do. And as a result, men may feel inadequate. What they see, they can't do, or they don't look like that, they can't act like that. So they may get some issues about self-worth and sense of who they are. But most of all, and worst of all, they get the wrong sense about what women are like, what women want, and what a relationship is. It's a subtle effect. It's not anything that happens quickly. It builds up over time, you know, from the earlier pornography, as Dr. Dines talks about, to building up to harder and harder as they become a little desensitized to what they're viewing, because there is no relationship. There is no intimacy. The sexuality is based on this, solely on this visual elements. And it's reinforced by a very, very powerful reinforcing mechanism, orgasm. They masturbate and they get an orgasm, and that's a very strong reinforcer. We are no different than many other animals, and people are easily trained. You may have heard of Pavlov in the early 20th century. I did a bunch of experiments. Pavlov's dog is a cliche. The dog essentially, they would ring a bell every time that dog was fed, and so the dog quickly started to associate the sound of that bell with food, and then they only had to ring the bell to make the dog salivate. Humans are no different. You reward with something, and you reinforce behavior. So, you know, there are men, too, that have never had a relationship, a real strong, intimate relationship. And until you have, you can't understand how much more powerful sex can be when it is intimate with somebody you love, when there's a connection with the other people, when you are pleasuring each other as one, when you're working together. There is nothing better than sex in a situation where you have intimacy and close relationship, where you have human contact. It's so much more powerful than pornography or masturbation. Otherwise, what some of the sex that these men are having, when even when there's a woman involved, because they've never learned how to have that relationship, is nothing really other than masturbating with a woman. And so that's possibly why they never develop that connection, because they don't know what's possible. They don't know what's out there. But it could also be that they've been damaged by years of watching too much pornography. And I'm not saying that all sexual imagery is bad. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with watching sexy stuff, you know, especially the milder stuff, if it's about the relationship and if it's about people being equal, if that's the imagery you're looking at. And if it's not a substitute for a relationship. And if you can understand the connection between sex and relationship and intimacy. That's the key. And I would really recommend this book. I would really urge everyone to take a look at it. Borrow it from the library or buy yourself a copy. It's called Pornland, How Porn Has Hijacked Our Sexuality by Dr. Gail Dines. But I've got to warn you, I've read this whole book and it has some really graphic descriptions. There's no pictures. So there's no porn in it other than the verbal descriptions. And some of these are very disturbing. But we should all know how far this can go, how far pornography can go. It's not just Playboy. It goes way beyond that today. And our kids can see that. Our kids will have access to it. And what kind of fetishes will develop as a result of these things? Who knows? How are we going to warp the future generations with these kinds of images? I don't know, but it really worries me. So everyone should read this. And everyone should therefore understand that naturism is actually the opposite of pornography. We are here because we believe in respect for self and respect for others and respecting the human body. We want to de-objectify the human body. Nudity is not about sex. Breasts, penises, bums, legs, whatever, are part of the whole about the person. This is not to say that we are not sexual beings. We are very much sexual beings, and sexuality is a wonderful part of who we are and what we are. But we have to realize that the most powerful sexuality comes from the mind, and it is in the context of a relationship with intimacy. You know, one of the funniest thing that happens at Bear Oaks is I get two very, very common questions. These are the two most common questions by men. The first one is, what do I do when I have an erection? I think everybody's heard of that one who's been in naturism for a while. The second most common question, strangely enough, is almost the opposite. I'm concerned that if I see women naked all the time, I'll lose my sex drive. I'm not going to get aroused and turned on anymore by women. And that shows you right there just how warped our sense of sexuality through society has become. We believe that sex is all about what we see as men only. And if we get used to it, there will be no sex. We don't understand that sex is about a thought, a look, feelings we have for each other. You know, my wife and I can look at each other from across the room and give each other a look, and we know what we're talking about. If sexuality was only about nudity, then after you've been in a relationship with somebody for more than a few weeks, it'd be gone. There'd be no turn on anymore, right? Because you've seen them naked and you're used to it. I've been married to my wife for 15 years and I'm still not used to her. Well, not used to her in a way that I'd be bored. I'm very used to her, very comfortable with each other, but we still have a wonderful sense of sexuality with each other. A very intimate one and a close relationship. So naturism is about respect for self and others. And therefore, it's the opposite of pornography because it pushes for relationships that are based on equality and intimacy, which are so much more powerful. And so we maintain our sexuality. And we are sexual beings. We are not denying that there is sexuality in being human. But we do recognize that it's much more complex than just the visual. And so we don't need hardcore pornography, or fetishes for that matter, because we're turned on by the just being human, by just being who we are. We're turned on naturally by our relationships with each other. In fact, in 1987, Dr. Marilyn Story published a paper in the Journal of Sex Research where she showed, amongst a few other things, that nudists, that's the term she used, as we know, I prefer naturists, but she talked about nudists. She showed that nudists had a lower incidence of deviant sexual behavior than the general public. Like the nudists were less likely to engage in non-normal or abnormal or non-mainstream sexual behavior than average. So I guess that kind of shows that we don't need it. It shows that in some ways we're more normal than normal. So naturism is the very antithesis to porn. Contrary, of course, to what the general public seems to think about what naturism is. So we have to keep putting that message out there. And we have to be clear that we are against hardcore pornography. So that's it for today's episode of the Naturist Living Show. Thank you again for listening and for helping us reach that 100,000 download milestone. It's very exciting. So if you have any questions or you want to send us comments, please send us an email to naturistliving@bareoaks.ca. And as usual, you can find links and additional information about a lot of the topics we discussed in this episode in the show notes, and that's found on the official website at naturistliving.bareoaks.ca, not .com, .ca, because we are in Canada. So join us again in about a month for the next episode of the Naturist Living Show.
This episode of the Naturist Living Show was brought to you by Bear Oaks Family Naturist Park, traditional naturist values in a modern setting. Traditional values means that naturism is more than just taking your clothes off. It is a life philosophy with physical, psychological, environmental, social, and moral benefits. Bear Oaks Family Naturist Park strives to promote those naturist values in a modern setting that provides the amenities and services that our members and visitors expect. Free your body, free your mind. Learn more at www.bareoaks.ca. Yeah.